Blog Talk Radio. Don't spend my grandson's paycheck. He's only 2 years old.
Wait. Stop.
Uh-oh.
We're not going to be spending our grandson's paycheck. We're going to be spending his grandson's paycheck.
Amen.
And his. Come on. Good evening. Welcome to American Conservative Party Radio. My name is Tracy.
And I'm Bill.
We're here to review and discuss that wonderful press conference that just ended almost precisely 1 hour and 3 minutes ago. I almost felt, you know what? I almost felt like it was a Butch Porter, who is the executive director, the chairman of the executive committee of the American Conservative Party Radio, when he has a meeting, it is on the clock. 1 hour.
Yep.
That's it. And I was looking at that clock and thinking, he's doing this in a very methodical way. I bet he had two more names on there, but saw that he had less than a minute to go and just said, we're done.
Yep.
Didn't let it
That'd
run
be
over.
My guess. And what the heck is this? I mean, when the heck did presidents start saying, okay, only these people get to ask questions? I mean,
has that been a standard practice?
And
he's
I missed
had a list
it?
All along, so I didn't find that to be out of the ordinary for what he was doing.
Well, I don't know. I seem to recall press conferences that President Bush, the just past President Bush, held, that reporters were jumping up saying, oh, call on me, Mr. President, and he'd point to somebody without referring to notes and say, yes, you, right there.
Well, I thought it was rather interesting. What I thought was rather interesting was he would call somebody's name and then say, is he here?
Exactly.
Like anybody in the press corps was not going to be there.
Yeah, exactly. Let me see. My name's on the list. Okay, yeah, I think I'll show up, right?
and then there was the thing with Ann Compton. I don't know if you caught it. Ann Compton was surprised she was called. This doesn't make any sense to me. This doesn't make any sense to me at all. So I guess
the only way that makes sense is if you say, okay, press people, Give me the questions that you're going to ask, and then I'm going to select the people that I want to answer those questions. And she maybe thought she submitted her questions, but then didn't think that she was going to get called on.
No, I don't believe that the questions get submitted ahead of time.
Really?
I really don't believe it. I think that the risk to the White House, and Obama specifically, if something like that got out, far outweighs whatever benefit Rahm Emanuel thinks would be gotten by getting the questions ahead of time.
Then why was she surprised that she got called on?
I don't. Because why was I surprised that she got surprised?
No, why was she surprised she got called on?
You know, I don't know. I really don't know. Other than the fact that you mentioned it quite clearly at previous presidents' press conferences, people said, "I want to ask a question," and they'd raise their hand.
Yep.
So you knew you were going to ask a question. You had a question in mind.
Yep.
Her question was pathetic.
and you are being so kind.
I'm sitting there like going, we are facing a historic president, a historic fiscal crisis, and she wants to know, hey, have you felt like somebody's been picking on you because you're black?
Yeah, really. Excuse me?
Have you noticed any behavioral differences of the heads of state that have talked to you? No, but we have noticed the fact that Obama apparently has a staff full of idiots.
Yes.
When it comes to foreign leaders.
Oh, man.
But
yeah.
I don't know that anybody's actually saying, well, they're idiots because Obama is black.
Mm-hmm.
You know, duh. You know, he's a naive, stuffed shirt in over his head. But it has nothing to do with his color.
Exactly. I mean, you could be a brown or a yellow or a white person and be just in as over your head as he is if you only had his experience.
Look at Joe Biden.
Exactly.
He's white. He's just as deeply in doo-doo as Obama is.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
I know.
Victoria, I didn't plan on doing this, but we were watching it while we were eating dinner, and he got probably three sentences before I started talking to the TV, and she goes, he can't hear you. And my basic response was, he wouldn't be listening even if he could.
That's right. And it's probably a good thing he couldn't hear you.
I was polite.
Oh, worry. Okay. Well, in that case, I take it all back.
I swore, but I was polite about it.
Oh, okay. Very good. I marvel at this guy. I mean, he has an hour of prime time on both coasts, and he wastes it with what he said. I mean, if you thought about what it was that he said to any of these, he only had four points that he wanted to make: healthcare costs, energy costs, education, and deficits. Those are the only four things that he wanted to talk about.
He said those were the most important things.
Pardon me?
And he said they were the most important things.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And the way he tried to make his points about those was, at least in my humble opinion, pathetic. I mean, folks, stop and think about this. When you look at your own personal economy, what is the thing that most worries you? The things that ought to worry you are, is your business going to survive? Will you have a job? What is your retirement account doing, if anything? Where do you go if your business folds? Nothing in his four points answers those questions for you. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And in fact, most of them make it worse.
I'm going to take that and carry it through with the same thing with a slight variation, because I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
The people that wake up tomorrow, the people that are clients of my clients,
mm-hmm.
are going to wake up tomorrow and go, well, I have a job at the end of today.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have enough gas in the car to get to work?
Yep.
If I don't, do I have enough money in the checking account to put gas in the car to get to work? And, oh yeah, by the way, I have to stop at the grocery store after work because we need milk and dinner.
Yep.
Do I have the money, enough money to cover those things to get home? Now, the average American, I'm absolutely convinced that the people that I deal with on a regular basis, that's their day. Okay?
Yes.
They don't care about the stock market except for once a quarter, once every half a year, whenever somebody suggests, did you notice that our 401k is down another 20%?
Mm-hmm.
You might pay attention to it.
Right.
Are you worried about the educational system if you have kids? Absolutely. And nothing the federal government does, not a single thing, not a single penny it spends, is going to change that problem in the local schools.
With one exception. When Congress votes to take away the School Choice Act for D.C.
You know what?
Yep.
The average American
doesn't think about that. That, nope, I agree.
And the reason they don't care is because if they think about the lower middle class and the middle class of the D.C. area, okay, they're going to think about them as government employees.
That's true, yes.
The entire
even though they aren't, but yes.
In my head, and I think I'm relatively intelligent, when I think of people working in D.C., I think of convenience store clerks and government employees.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't have a whole lot of consideration and thought for a great number of things. And I have clients in that area, and the vast majority of their clients are, in fact, government employees.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's reinforced in my head as far as that is concerned. So I don't think about D.C. in that regard. I understand the issue with the choice issue and how bad and negative it is, but the vast majority of the United States doesn't have that benefit. So for D.C. for it to be taken away, it doesn't have any impact.
Doesn't resonate with them. That's right.
It doesn't.
It should, but it doesn't.
Right, because the big deal is the fact that we have to deal with the teachers and the unions we have in our districts and the funding that we have in our district. And in some places, they have to worry about what's being taught. In other places, we've simply given up on the fact that our kids are going to be taught crap and we will take care of that at home to straighten
right.
out the mess on a day-to-day basis.
Yes.
Now, that covers my day-to-day thing. You know, most people don't care about health care until they need it.
That's right.
Or until they have to pay for it.
Yes.
And he's not going to help in that regard.
No. In fact, he will make it worse.
He's going to make it a whole lot worse. But again, it's not a worse you're going to pay attention to until you absolutely need it.
That's right. That's right. I mean,
so most people, again, not an issue that's going to have a big deal with them.
Except that it should. I mean,
it
folks.
I'm not disputing a second.
Okay.
That many of the things should resonate with people. I'm just suggesting that it doesn't.
Yep. And that's too bad because, I mean, frankly, there's only one way you bring down costs in terms of medical care, and that is you deny it. You can ration medical care on price or availability. That's the only two ways that you can affect medical costs.
I disagree.
Well, I would be willing to listen to your arguments, but I've given a lot of thought to that. We presently ration it on price. That's how it currently works. You can change that by saying I'm going to ration that by availability, by treatment costs.
We can talk about it a little bit more a little bit later, but this is what I want to say. If the price was exactly the same today as tomorrow, but today your employer pays it and tomorrow you pay it,
mm-hmm.
big difference.
Oh, yeah.
Huge
no,
difference.
I agree.
Okay, so I don't see the issue on price. We'll come
okay.
back to that because I do want to discuss his particular point of view as far as how to deal with healthcare costs.
Okay.
Energy. Look, the only thing people care about is what's the price I got to pay today.
Yes.
They don't care, realistically speaking, about what the price is going to be next week unless they know they're going to need to buy gas next week because they're going to go through it faster this week.
Yes. Yep.
Okay? I'm paying attention to gas prices right now over the last couple of days simply because we're up about 15, 20 cents around here
mm-hmm.
in the last
mm-hmm.
week. And I filled up the tank before it had the big jump, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
But Victoria wanted to take a little road trip today.
Oh, boy. Okay.
So we were gone for about 3 hours and added about 140 miles to the tank. Well, that took my somewhere around pretty close to three quarters of a tank down to just over a quarter of a tank, and now I'm going to have to buy gas this week.
Yep.
And I know gas prices change Thursday morning.
Aha.
So the question is, do I get gas tomorrow night, figuring that gas price is going to go up on Thursday morning, or do I wait till Thursday morning and see if the prices come down and then take my chances?
The bet is get it tomorrow night.
Probably, but even if it goes up 5 cents, we're talking about a great grand total of 70 cents on a tank for me.
I know.
It's not a big deal, but it's something that I'm actually paying attention to.
Exactly.
And I think the vast majority of people do also.
Yes.
But it's not long term. I'm not thinking about gas prices over the summer. They're going to be higher, I know it, and there's nothing I can do about it.
Right.
Okay? But I'm not thinking about it. So of his four things, we've talked about three. Healthcare,
mm-hmm.
energy policy,
mm-hmm.
and education.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, on a day-to-day basis, those three big problems don't resonate with the average person. And his argument that that's what needs to be addressed in order to resolve the problem,
mm-hmm.
I would suggest if you are not blinded by Obama, not completely awed by Obama, you're going like, huh?
Yeah.
How is that going to fix the problem?
Yeah,
I'm underwater on my mortgage. Exactly how is that going to fix my problem?
Yep.
My employer is cutting people out left, right, and center because they sell high-end refrigeration and kitchen appliances, and orders have fallen through the floor.
Yes.
How are those three things going to help my employer keep my job safe?
Exactly.
He can sit there and say, we have to invest in infrastructure, and that'll help our economy, till he's blue in the face, and it's not going to change the fact that most people are going to go, bullshit.
Exactly. Exactly.
Clear and utter bullshit.
Yep.
Now, let's talk about this fourth item. We've got to get the deficit down.
Oh, boy.
If the government is going to increase infrastructure, healthcare, and education, where are they going to take money out of in order to cut the deficit in half?
Exactly.
He suggested two things that I thought was rather interesting. First, he talked about procurement in the Defense Department.
Absolutely.
Hello,
Jimmy Carter!
I was in the military in 1977 to 1981, and let me tell you, they were talking about $15,000 hammers and $25,000 toilet seats in
mm-hmm.
1978.
Procurement
is an issue that every president talks about and nothing gets changed, because if you even understood for a second military procurement, you'd understand that any hope and prayer of ever changing it is right out the window. It can never happen.
Yep.
As long as government says that you cannot go down to the hardware store and buy a hammer, they're going to pay $15,000 for hammers.
That's exactly right. And you know, let me tell you the bad thing about that. There is a craft there on the M1A1 tank, the Abrams, are top of the line model, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, actually, it's the M1A2 now. But anyway, in order to calibrate the tracking mechanism for the main gun,
yes,
it takes a special tool.
Okay.
Now, I don't know what the cost is to the military for that special tool, but it doesn't work really good. However, Sears, Craftsman Tools, sells a very good tool that does exactly the same job. And most of the people that are responsible for that on their tank purchase that tool out of their own funds. And my guess is it probably costs at least 10 times and maybe more less than what the government pays for it.
Sure. I was an air traffic controller when I was in the military for part of my time in there.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a tool that we called the 7 level.
Ah.
Okay. And you were allowed, certain people were allowed a variation of the 7 level called a 5 level. And this tool was done for exactly the same general reason as you were bringing up,
mm-hmm.
for calibration of the radar equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, everyone wanted to reach the point where they could have a 5 level or a 7 level,
mm-hmm.
but, of course, only the senior staff had 5 levels and 7 levels because, you know, you didn't want just anybody calibrating the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I still have my 5 level.
Very good.
Yes. It is a screwdriver about 3 inches tall, and it has a 1/8 inch blade.
Aha. And it fits perfectly, doesn't it?
It fits perfectly because the pots that you use to adjust the things require a 1/8 inch flat blade screwdriver
yep.
to do it. And
yep.
everybody would carry it in their pocket because that's just simply what you did. You know, procurement is an issue that will never die, and every president
right.
will say, we're going to save billions of dollars on procurement. BS.
Yep. Yeah,
right.
they will.
So that's $40 billion. And I was thinking, $40 billion over 10 years is $4 billion a year, which is about 1% of the defense budget, but it is a quarter of 1% of the whole budget.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not going to get us real close to a half the deficit. So, what's the other thing that he said not once, not twice, but he said it 3 times? Healthcare costs are a primary way to bend the curve on structural deficits.
Yep.
And I thought, well, let me see. If he believes that the primary way to get rid of deficits, and we're talking about a couple trillion a year, is to deal with health care costs, well, that certainly explains his brilliant idea of charging service members for their insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's clear nobody else is going to be able to afford it.
Yep.
Or your suggestion that we're going to ration it. The only
yes.
way we can eliminate structural costs is to simply eliminate half the health care in this country. How do we eliminate half the health care in this country?
Well, isn't that an interesting question?
How can we eliminate half of the health care costs in this country? Well,
how
we could eliminate half the population.
Yes, that would be one way.
Or, having been in the insurance industry for a little while, this little number always stood out. The average person spends 95% of every dollar of all the dollars they're going to spend on health insurance in their entire life in the last year of their life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if we could eliminate the expenses of the last year of your life, we could have a pretty big impact on healthcare costs.
Exactly. And how do you think we might get to that point?
Well, we could certainly ask senior citizens to simply stop using health care.
Oh, yes. That would be
one
way.
We could suggest to senior citizens that as they are old, we want to save all of the health care benefits for the young so they don't need heart transplants, kidney transplants, lung transplants, knee replacements, back surgery, eye surgery,
chemotherapy,
kidney dialysis. We could ask them to, you know, give up those things.
Oh yeah, we could do that. And that would certainly save a lot of money.
But I don't know that it would get rid of half the deficit.
Well,
right now, medical care is only about 25% to 30% of the entire budget. If we got rid of all of it, we wouldn't get up to 30. We would only get about a third of it saved. We need to get up to 50%. You know, frankly, I don't think Obama's numbers add up.
Well, I've never thought that they've added up. I mean, if you eliminate the entire Defense Department budget and you save half of the medical budget, you still haven't gotten to $1.3 trillion, which is the latest estimate of his, it's $1.8 trillion, is his first-year budget's deficit. If you completely eliminated them, you would not get there.
You still haven't. Well, I think we're going to have to need a little bit more detail. And, of course, detail is the one thing that doesn't come out of this administration very easily.
No, it doesn't. As former President Clinton said, the devil is in the details.
I spent a fair amount of time reading about Geithner's plan as he announced it yesterday.
Oh, boy.
I'm sure you've read a fair amount of stuff, too.
Oh, yeah. And in fact, I've already read about how you can game that system.
Oh, well, here, it's really easy. Let me explain it to all of our listeners.
Yes.
How this system works.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Banks own, let's pretend, $100 million worth of mortgages.
Okay.
The government is going to go and ask private investors to buy into a fund that will buy these $100 million worth of mortgages off the banks.
And as an aside, gosh, doesn't that sound like a hedge fund?
As a matter of fact, there is some suggestion that hedge funds will, in fact, be the ones handling the paperwork.
And those are the people that we hated a week ago.
We hated them a week ago.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Bill, I think you have some banking experience. I have some economic experience. We should go out and see if we can raise, well, we don't have to raise $100 million to buy them.
Nope.
Because
the
government's going to give us $93 million to buy $100 million worth of mortgages. They're going to give them to us, me and you, $93 million to buy it. Now, the bank...
And it gets better than that, too, but go ahead.
And the bank... Now, the bank is going... We're going to take our $7 million. We're going to take the government's $93 million. We're going to go to the hedge fund and say, we want to buy $100 million worth of bank assets.
Mm-hmm.
And the bank is going to allow us to buy $100 million worth of bank assets.
Yes, they are.
We're going to give the bank $100 million, $93 million from the government, and $7 million from our own money. But, you know, I don't happen to have $7 million in your pocket. Do you got $7 million in your pocket?
Yeah, I'm a little short this week.
There's a bank that'll loan us $7 million.
Yep.
As long as the government guarantees it.
Yes.
Which it will, but only at 50%.
Yep.
So, we go, we buy $100 million off of that. We borrow $7 million from the banks. The banks get $100 million from us and the federal government, $93 million. And the hedge fund collects $2 million in fees for the process. And then we find out that for some particularly strange reason, we couldn't understand it whatsoever, the $100 million worth of mortgages is actually only worth $40 million.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, isn't that a load of crap?
Yes.
So I sit there and go, Bill, you know, this sucks.
It's a bad deal.
I think we should get out of it.
Okay.
What do you think?
I think we ought to get out of it, too. Who do you think we ought to sell it to?
I think we should sell it to the government.
Oh, there's a good idea. They have lots of money.
We'll sell it to the government, who will take it off our hands for 10 cents on the dollar.
Yep.
So we get $4 million.
Yes, indeed.
We'll split it 50-50.
Yep.
And then the bank is on the hook for the $93 million that they put into the pot for it. And because the loans from the government and the bank were non-recourse, they can't come back after us for it. The bank is going to be out the $7 million, but they're going to get $3.5 million from the government because of the 50% coverage. Bank, in the meantime, sold off $100 million worth of mortgages that were only worth $40 million. So they actually made a profit of $57 million. The hedge fund made profit. You and I made profit. And Uncle Sam is on the hook for about $101 million.
And folks, just so that we're very clear on this, the federal government doesn't have that money. Guess what? Your taxes just went up.
Because Bernanke didn't actually really have that money, he just asked the Fed for it.
That's right.
Hey, gads. Brilliant people. Brilliant people. And, Bill, I really think we should get together and see if we can come up with, you know, a plan.
I'm working on that one. That's easy
Ladies
money.
And gentlemen, that plan is not only gameable, that plan was designed to be gameable.
Oh, absolutely.
There's no way in the world anybody's going to make any, well, everybody's going to make money on it except for the taxpayer who's going to be left hanging on to $100 million worth of mortgages that are going to be worth something. However, they're going to have to pay about $137 million for them.
Yep.
In the end.
Yep.
They'll get something back out of it, 50 cents on the dollar maybe.
I actually probably even more than that. They'll probably get about 60 or 70 cents.
So
I mean,
the government will actually only be on the hook for about $60 million. That's not too bad.
Out of that one particular bank's portfolio. Now multiply that by, and frankly, guys, let me tell you, this isn't the banks, okay? Every bank that I've worked for, when you originate a mortgage, you sell that mortgage. You sell it to FHA, you sell it to Fannie Mae, you sell it to Freddie Mac. You retain the servicing, which means that you get to collect about 0.25% of the payment each month for keeping track of it all. You're a bookkeeper, and you get to charge a fee to do that.
And
but your actual liability at the bank is zero. Nothing.
Okay.
It
we've
is
got
all
two callers.
The federal government. Pardon
we've
me?
We've got two callers. I want to bring on our two callers, find
okay.
out who it is. I think I know one of the names on there. We'll get one of these two callers come in. And we've got a long way to go. I got a hunch we're not going to get anywhere near getting this.
No, we could have a 24-hour telethon and not get this covered.
I swear. Okay,
yep.
Caller number one, I think I recognize your area code 703.
Oh, yeah.
Sign in, please.
Well, howdy.
Butch, how in the heck are you?
Butchmeister.
Like, you know, if I was any happier, I would be in the Obama administration, you know?
Or they tax you on it, one or the other.
Well, you know, I'm thinking I should dodge my taxes for a couple of years. Maybe.
You think maybe?
I'd have a shot.
That might get you an offer of a job.
It would help. It would,
yes, it would.
Know. Hey, I wanted to comment really quick on the whole health care thing.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are dead spot on. Here's the way it works. We want to be European, and
yep.
so we don't want to move in the direction that France is moving, which is they're privatizing like crazy because it's going bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
We want to go in the German direction. And the German direction is, it's one word, it's euthanasia. It's really
yep.
that simple. So,
oh, I didn't want to go there. It's absolutely
oh,
where it's going, but I certainly didn't want to go
that
there.
That is where it's going because you're absolutely right. I don't know if the numbers are right. It's 75, 95. It's the last 6 months. It's the last year. It's the last 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
But a very, very, very large percentage of, it's at least 75% of your expenses lifetime is in the last 6 months of life.
Yep.
And a lot of that is lifestyle changes. You know, people don't die at home anymore. That's
mm-hmm.
a real major problem. And so, you know, but the core problem there, and I'm not going to preach on this. This is what I do for a living, so it's, you know, it's important to me. But we have a private system. We do not have a market-driven system. And who's at fault? It's not hard. It's FDR. It's wage fixes and price fixes.
Yep.
No mystery there. As soon as you took the individual out of the equation, then you don't have a market-driven system anymore. As soon as you get people back in the equation with higher deductibles, you're going to have a market-driven system again, and it'll work. But if you take it out of corporations' hands and you put it in government's hands, nothing's going to change. And, in fact, the only thing that will happen is rationing and euthanasia, and it's going to be a freaking disaster. So,
yes, it will.
And I'll have to go find another job, which would suck.
Well, and that's a bummer.
That is enough. America, that is enough for you to fight this, is for Butch not to have to go find something else to do for a living.
There you go.
Because I'm going to be really mad and bored and very activist.
Yeah.
And you don't
want
that.
Well, you know, it is the biggest thing that I have to argue with as far as, you know, people in that are big proponents of, you know, a single-payer system, it simply just doesn't work. The problem that I see is it'll look like it works, sort of, for the first 5 or 6 years. It won't really be working because all the problems that will be happening, they will pawn it off as we're still working the bugs out of the system.
Sure, absolutely.
Right.
So people will give it a lot of leeway, even though, you know, it's not bugs in the system, it's structural defects that are in the system that are not going to be worked out. And after 5 or 6 years of dealing with it, we'll just simply figure out how to deal with it and deal with it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where they'll go with it. But it'll take another 10 or 15 years before the really significant damage
that involves humans should not be in the federal financially. The federal government should not be involved with. It's not that hard. The federal government is about things. You know, it's infrastructure. It's protecting. It's, you know, and as soon as you start paying for health care. Those things are better managed by humans and not governments. It's really not that mysterious, you know.
Exactly. I started thinking over the weekend, could you come up with an amendment to the Constitution? And, you know, I'm not a big fan of amendments on the Constitution. But could you come up with an amendment on the Constitution that says the federal government shall make no law affecting individuals?
Yo, I like that.
Okay, now, all the legalisms are going to say every law is going to affect individuals. No. You know, there has to be a way to suggest that the federal government should not be doing anything that impacts a individual, a corporation. So, a tax on a 90% on a bonus that is received by an individual can't do it.
Isn't that in the Article 1, I mean, Bill of Attainder?
Is it?
Well,
is that...
only if it's retroactive.
So, that was, you know, I was...
Was that your point? Yeah.
That's my point.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. Yeah, it's insane. Yeah, you're right, it's insane.
Okay, so, we have this big problem with the healthcare. You know, Obama thinks that it's the one place where, you know, we need to save lots of money, and, of course, government spending $2 trillion a year on... healthcare is the way to save money. I don't get that one anymore than here to. You know, as far as I'm concerned, Butch, your career field is safe.
You think?
I do. I really do. Simply because all you need, even Victoria is already reaching a point where she's a little bit concerned by the idea that they might decide that she's too sick to actually help.
Yep.
She didn't like that idea a whole lot.
You also make it with how the transplant system works, you know, you have to kind of qualify. You have to show that, you know, in order to qualify for a transplant, you know, liver, lung, or whatever it is.
Cost effective.
That you have to have, all your other organs have to be operating pretty well. You can't be an alcoholic, you know, you have to have good prospects. surviving.
Yep.
The entire healthcare system is going to be set up that way if it's nationalized. I mean, that's
right. And Victoria is a diabetic with high blood pressure, and you know, because of those two things, and she has RA and asthma. Between those four things, you know, her systemic, you know, problems are legendary. I mean, every bad thing you can think of that happens to people with high blood pressure and diabetes, she's got. And those things don't get better.
Nope.
No, they don't.
They get managed, but they don't get better. All right. So, Butch, you put up there, I'm going to bring on the other person who was washing dishes in the background.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so sorry. I apologize. I heard a lot of noise earlier, and I guess that's what it is. Somebody called in and just put in a lot of noise on the system. But I wanted to compliment what the prior gentleman said. I think his name is George. I'm Louisa from Maryland. And
hello.
I wanted to say hi.
Louisa! Hey,
yes.
This is Bill.
Hi, Bill. Now, I've listened to your show fairly often, and I want to validate what he said. Right, about a few months ago, I read that the state of Oregon, if somebody who has to rely on state funds for medical care, they will now get a letter telling them, refusing the medical care, and telling them that they will offer to pay for an assisted suicide if they have less than a 5% chance of living 5 or more years.
Yes.
So those letters are going out in the state of Oregon. I believe that Obama has had that clearly in mind. You are aware of his infanticide record in Illinois. His choices for head of health and human services were for Stashel. He doesn't care about taxes. I don't believe Obama cares about money, but I do believe he understands all of this flim-flam with the Treasury and the stimulus bills. I believe he knows where this is going. I believe his objective is to take the country down. And part of it is to eliminate health care, but not just eliminate health care, but to eliminate undesirable people in the population. I think ultimately the plan for health care for the geriatric people is the needle. That's why he picked Daschle. Daschle made anti-elderly statements with regard to the amount of health care that they received. And now he has this other woman who is just an extreme abortionist, type pro-abortionist type person, to the extent that the Catholic Church finally has said something about this in terms of their participation in services, that there is a conflict here. And you need that kind of person in place to put these, you know, genocide, they're, right now it's euthanasia, but with regard to the embryonic stem cell, I believe that's going to turn into eugenics, you know. That's where the guy's going.
It's all happening in war, Louisa. I mean, it happened 75 years ago, and it happened 60 years ago, and it's happening again. It's not that shocking. And
oh, but you're
depressing.
Still on. Good.
It's depressing, but it's shocking.
But you're not in conflict with what I'm saying, I would presume.
No.
No, I. You know what, let me suggest something. I. God help me. I'm actually saying God help me. But God help me.
I knew you would.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Tracy, I listen to you and I know who you are. Go ahead. Even though I know you say you're agnostic. But go ahead. God help you. Say what? I'm sorry.
I'm going to defend Obama a little bit.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Yes.
Wait a minute. I have to shut down my hearing aid here.
She's playing devil's advocate. I came on pretty strong. But you may go ahead.
I said a little bit of this last week or the week before, and I'm going to reset it because I think it's absolutely true. The problem with liberals as a general rule, the problem with Obama in specifics and his administration, the people that he works for, is they lack an ability to look at events in a sequence other than discrete events. They cannot look at how an event creates consequences, how it creates ripples as each event goes out. We see that, you, I, most people that are cognizant of the world, see that when certain events occur, that those things have ripple effects. You know, the towers, you know, got hit by planes. We saw that as a part of the a much larger ripple that happened spreading out from 9/11. They see it as a discrete event.
Mm-hmm.
It happened, it's over, now we go on to September 12th. Okay? They're genetically impossible for them to get past the idea that an event has lasting consequences. It's a discrete event. So Obama proposes things, and Geithner, who's an economist by training, this is beat into economists. It's something that I've fought for years in the academic world to say, you know, you've got to actually think about consequences. No, they don't do that. It is this inability to get past discrete events. So they see their actions as this is a natural consequence. If you want this, you do this. In an academic setting, they're perfectly correct.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to change healthcare, make it single payer. It becomes more efficient. You don't have all this extra stuff going there. It makes perfect sense in a discrete world. In the real world, those events have consequences. Spreads out beyond that. It is beyond their ability to understand. It is beyond their ability to do it. So I don't see Obama as having this great end plan that there. He doesn't think like that. It's not even genetically possible for him to think
like that. That's a very insightful definition of liberals. I hadn't heard that, and that's very, very good. They see things as a discrete event. I'm going to offer another suggestion with regard to how Obama is defined. He is using liberals. Yes, he is limited in terms of the consequences of his decisions, but not to the extent that the liberals are that he is using within his cabinet. He has no longtime associates surrounding him anywhere. His real long-time associates are truly, truly compromised and have to remain hidden. He does have a sense of the consequence of his decisions. However, he is limited in that he doesn't understand the higher good, you know. But he does have a sense of the consequence of decisions, and he does know that he is using the liberals around him who have that limitation that you've just described to accomplish very negative consequences in this country. I cannot lump him with the liberals, let's say, like Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid. You know, they're just totally limited. They're being used.
You know what? There's something that's always been said. You know, Victoria loves listening to George Norrie and Art Bell late at night because she's an insomniac and she puts the radio on and listens to that. And, you know, you listen to some of their conspiracy nuts, and the most common response to the conspiracy nuts is very simply, do you think for a second that the average government employee is that competent? And my comment to you about Obama just using the left is, you know, I think he's a pretty smart guy in general, but he's nowhere near that smart.
He's not that competent. He's the front man for other people that are, but he's on the
I don't think so.
He's read the book.
And the reason I don't think so is because, and I do agree, these people do exist. There are people in the world that are inherently evil.
Yeah.
Okay,
yep.
I do believe that those type of people exist. I also believe that they are pretty rare, and I also believe that they are candidates generally for the Darwin Award because they can't see their own foibles.
Yeah.
Obama's the same way.
Yeah.
He doesn't understand that he's not that smart.
Yes, I understand that too. No, I understand. He's sort of an empty suit. I understand that. He's the front man.
And the average person that would support him that I think you are concerned by and think people like Soros and stuff like that don't understand their own limitations.
That I understand too.
At some point, though, you have to look at the totality of actions and say, What does this logically lead to?
Sure, and we can see
and,
that.
And you judge somebody based on the totality of their actions.
But they'll look at you and go, that's not even possible. That's not my intent. That's not what we're trying to do. And they'll be dead serious about it. And you'll
oh,
have
I
to look at them and go, they're dead
liberals
serious
will,
about it.
But Obama would be lying.
I understand that they are dead serious about it. But the fact remains that if you look at the totality of actions and you contemplate where do those lead, and if that brings you to a conclusion, then you need to accept that conclusion with the exception that you always have to look at what is the subsequent action.
Well, that's why most
if,
of us...
If that subsequent action reinforces your belief that, yes, here is the path that we are on, then at some point in time you have to accept, yes, there's the path we're on, here are the conclusions that path will lead to, and you have to say, do I agree with that or not? I guess the good news is independents are saying, oops, wait a minute, I think we just screwed up.
My problem is, and I'm giving them a way out, but I know they won't take it, so I'm not too worried about it.
Gil, didn't I say you were generous one time? Tracy,
yes, you did.
Tracy is generous too.
Don't get too carried away. Don't tell anybody because it's not something that I try to promote.
Yeah.
The liberals can't look at it that way. We look at it, you and I, and most of the people that would be listening to the show that pay attention to the American Conservative Party. We understand that it's not just the intent; it's the result.
Exactly.
Okay. Whereas liberals have no care about the result because the intent is what mattered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we tried to do this. We made a good effort at it. We failed, but you know what? That's not the part, you know, it's oh so bad, but we tried.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they can't look at it. That's why Obama can't look at it. He can't look at his actions and a year from now or 2 years from now, realizing that they have done horrible damage, certainly no benefit, he won't be able to say, well, you know, I screwed up, and now we have to change a different way. He's
Tracy,
going to say...
Him having enforcement under him, he won't care.
What?
He'll have all of the enforcement agencies under him. He won't care.
Well, it's not even a matter of not caring. It's this idea of the discrete events, because he's not going to look at the consequences. He's not going to look at the results. He's going to look at the events that are existing at that time and then address those events. What happened before is what happened before.
Mm-hmm.
And
you mean the reality-based community is not based on reality? Is that what you're saying, Tracy?
Oh, no. I'm saying that it is based on today's reality.
Ah.
And today's reality has no bearing on yesterday because that's the past, and we're past that. And it has no bearing on the future because we need to deal with today. We have to deal with the problems of today. Today is today. Their reality is today. There is no tomorrow. There was no yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And tomorrow will be today.
Mm-hmm.
And it is this stepwise progression. Bill, there was a time in your life when things started where you could remember a month. You could remember every day of that month.
Yep.
You could remember almost every hour of every day of that month. I call that a continuity of thought.
Yes.
It doesn't happen until people are usually in their late 20s. Before then, it is discrete events. Your days, your life is events. This happened on Friday. That happened on Saturday. You don't remember what happened between the event on Friday and the event on Saturday. You only remember the event on Friday and the event on Saturday. But at some point, as you got older, that process began to meld so that you had a continuity of thought. you could remember long phrases. Liberals never enter that process.
So they're all children, basically.
Yes.
It is
that
a
is interesting.
It is
that's
a discrete event-oriented life.
I could never figure it out. This is interesting. That's very interesting.
I watch
I
every day.
I couldn't figure it out.
I watch
disorder.
It with my teenager. I watch it with Victoria. It is discrete events. It is not this continuity of thought. Victoria will tell you that she has continuity of thought, but it is not. But it is not consequent driven.
Hmm.
It is.
That is interesting.
Event oriented. And I see it, and you look at the liberals, you look at Obama, you look at most of these people that are politicians, and you go, they can't be this stupid. They can't be. Nobody in their right mind could propose a $3 trillion budget and say we're cutting the deficit in half. Nobody could be that stupid, but they're doing it. And you sit there and kind of go, come on, how can you be There's only one way to explain it. They see today, they do today, tomorrow is another day, and we deal with new events that day. And it makes perfect sense when you look at Obama, who goes to Jay Leno on Friday night and goes to his bracket picks. You know, I called it the $250,000 vacation. Obama wants to cut government expenses, but he spent $250,000 to go see Jay Leno.
Frankly, I think he's a little bit more conscious of what he's doing. I give him credit, more credit to being more calculating than you do in this thing, but I totally agree with your narrative with regard to the liberal mentality, and I think he's just capitalizing on that. So we disagree there, but this is a fascinating observation that you've just shared. Fascinating.
You know what? We'll get an opportunity to see it over the next 2 or 3 years in action, and
yes,
we'll see if in the end...
I hope you're right. I hope you are right. I hope you are correct. That's what I'm telling
you. Yeah, exactly.
Louisa, we need you to
find. Because if I'm correct,
great.
Man,
yeah,
are we screwed.
Yeah. No, if you're correct, if I'm correct, we are screwed.
No, if you're correct, we're dead.
Exactly. You got it. Exactly, honey. You got it.
If
right
you're
on
correct,
the
we're dead. If I'm
exactly.
correct, we're just screwed.
Exactly. You got it.
Okay.
I will let you all go, and I will listen to the computer. I'll listen to the computer. But thank you so much. I enjoy your show.
Thanks for joining us
Thanks,
tonight.
Thanks, Louisa.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. So a couple minutes left. Obama, we obviously saw he used a teleprompter, but he didn't use the ones that were up close.
Yeah.
It had to be something straight back of the cameras because his eyes almost never left. Looking straight ahead.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't talk to that audience at all. He was talking to the teleprompter. There was no doubt about that. You know, I didn't see any particularly big gaffes. I did like his little roundabout answer to the Palestinian thing. You know, how was he going to address the Palestinians? And he started talking about health care again. I'm like,
yeah,
okay.
Right. Yeah,
exactly. All right, if you want to go that way, that's fine.
Yep.
You know, some of the things that he just said, one of the things that I did want to say, he's going to cut programs that don't work. Please, name one program that he cuts.
He's awfully careful not to do that, isn't he?
I can guarantee you by the end of this year, not one single program currently in place will be cut from the budget and permanently ended. Not one. That's all I
yep.
have to say.
Yep.
Website.
What's the website?
Yeah. Let's cross market here, Tracy.
Gotta cross market, Tracy. Come on.
AmericanConservatives.org.
AmericanConservatives.org.
Oops, you know
Sorry.
What? I screwed that up on Twitter today then.
That's all right.
America.
We're going to get the other one pointed in the right direction before it's over with. You'll have
okay.
to tonight, all right?
I saw my chat room is back. Thank you, Butch.
Okay.
All right, Bill, 30 seconds left. I think we should pick this up next week.
I think
so. I think
we've
got plenty of stuff to talk about.
Oh, man.
The rain here is falling. We've got 3 inches of rain projected. We're going to have some flooding, yay. But it's not snowing. It's 50 degrees.
Yep.
Bill, thanks for joining us tonight. I'm sorry
thank
I made
you,
you watch the Obama thing. Everyone
yep.
that joined us tonight, thanks. Talk to you next week.
Good night, everybody.
We're good, dude. We're good.
Hey, excellent.
That was a good show.
That was a good show. I'm glad. Butch, if you're still there, thanks for calling in. That was a good thing there.
So is the lady one of your
Louisa is on Conservative Talk, and she's a CPA there in Maryland, I think.
That's what she said. She was in Maryland.
Yeah, nice lady. I enjoy chatting with her. So anyway, okay. So are we gonna try and pick this theme up again next week? You think or what?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was kind of weird. We had a lot of archive listeners of both archives, and I'm glad they got that thing straightened out. Though they never sent me a message that they had straightened it out, but it was clear they had.
Good. Okay.
It said we only had 6 live callers tonight. I think that number will probably go up a little bit.
Okay.
6 live yeah. listeners. 4 callers, which was pretty consistently right.
Yeah.
But we had a lot of archive listeners over the last 2 weeks.
Oh,
so.
Excellent. Good. Okay. Okay.
All right.
Well, I'm gonna go try and do you have any idea when they put those archives up?
It's up now. It's up immediately. One of the first things I do when we're done with the show is I go on and I mark this episode
yeah.
as the featured episode so that it when people click on, it automatically loads up.
Okay.
So
well, I'll give you a little bit of time and then I'm going to load it up on CT then.
Oh, you should be able to put it up right away.
Oh, okay. Good. I will do that.
And I'm almost caught up on my backlog of stuff, although I got new cases today. I'm caught up. Thank God I don't have
excellent.
To do what
I saw your comment on Twitter there.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Whenever you see me open a file where it says Hal, open a file.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm actually starting a case right then.
All right. Okay.
And Hal closing a file, that's me saying I'm done with it. So,
cool. Excellent.
It's a way for my clients to know that I'm actually working on a file.
Got it.
You know, no one else knows what file I'm working. No one knows what file I'm working on.
Right.
But
they just
clients
know
that I'm actually working on a file at that particular moment in time. So.
Cool.
Anyways, all right. Have any? Oh.
Yeah.
I finished Common Sense.
Oh really?
Payne's Common Sense.
Yeah.
I'm going to add it into I'm going to use parts of it as chapter headings in the book, and then I'm going to spend a little bit of time. I think I'm going to add some parts to my rights that expound upon some of the things that he said. There was something that he wrote the Quakers had written a letter opposing independence in the spring of 76 because it was warmongering, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And he responded to them specifically. And basically what he said was, you're really good religious people, but you have no business in the politics.
Ah.
So go home and shut up.
Whoa. Gee, God, history does repeat itself, doesn't it?
His arguments are interesting in the sense that he showed them to be self-contradictory.
Hmm.
There's aspects of that I want to be able to use. I found it rather interesting. I'm not going to read Rights of Men yet. Because he wrote that in regards to the French Revolution, and there's too many Burkeans in the conservative movement to accept that particular point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've never read it before, so I'm not going to taint my brain with that particular stuff until after I get farther along.
Okay.
But I'm actually able to start, now that I don't have to worry about the party,
mm-hmm.
and now that things are settling as far as business is concerned, I can get back to this, to that book that I was, that I started way back in the summer.
Yeah.
That's my intent, is to hopefully have it done. Victoria wants to move this summer out to California.
Oh, yeah?
We've had two real estate people come in. Both of them are nuts. A house 100 yards away from this house sold in December.
Okay.
For $175 a square foot.
Okay.
Most of the houses in the neighborhood are selling for about $150 a square foot.
Hmm.
Both real estate agents suggested that our house was worth about $110 a square foot.
Oh, my goodness.
Doesn't make any sense.
Hmm.
There's no reason for us to be at that price range.
Mm-hmm.
Other than the fact is, at $175, we would be $100,000 more expensive than any other house in the neighborhood.
Oh.
The reason is, we have 6 bedrooms, 3 baths.
We're
a bigger house than any other house in the neighborhood.
Oops. You got the bad situation of having the best house on the block.
No, we don't have the best house on the block. We're not worth $175 a square foot because we don't have the amenities.
Ah.
You know, we don't have the tile floors. We don't have the granite countertops. We have the standard, you know, flooring, standard countertops.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not worth $175. But we're probably worth a lot closer to $140 than we are to $111.
Yep.
And $140 puts us where we need to be to leave to go to California.
Mm-hmm.
But it also puts us about $30,000 to $40,000 above anything else that's selling in the neighborhood. But not above the house that sold in December.
Hmm.
It sold for $175 a square foot, but it has 800 square feet less.
Ah.
So
okay.
We would sell for about $30,000 more with 3 bedrooms, a bath, and a full-size family room in addition to what they have.
Got it.
So to suggest that we're, you know, that house sold for $320, you know, we should sell for at least $10,000 a bedroom and a bathroom.
Yeah.
That's, you know, $10,000 a bedroom that and plus the extra bathroom, that's $40,000. That's all we're looking for.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, we can get in the $350-$360 range, you know, and that's only $130 a square foot. So that's when you put us in the, that sells us there, but we don't understand why they've got us down at $111, which is nuts.
Are they
puts us in the hole.
Are they showing you what the comps are to support that?
Oh yeah. Both of them used every comp in the neighborhood except the one house that has sold in the last 6 months.
Jesus. Okay.
And the first guy, he looked at me straight in the face. I said, "Doesn't that house value have anything to do with our house value?" He said, "No, but it'll help you when the time comes to get a loan."
Oh my gosh.
Okay, Mr. Banker.
Hello.
That make any sense to you?
No.
Okay. Idiot,
good
yes?
gracious.
Okay. So
they're trying to anticipate the market.
I think they're driving the market. The first guy came in, before he walked in the door,
mm-hmm.
he had taken our, you can pull sheets from the assessor's office on a house.
Right.
And he had one of those sheets for our house.
Mm-hmm.
And he had written on what he thought the house was worth
mm-hmm.
before he came.
Hmm.
I know that because I was with him every second he was in this house.
Wow.
And he never wrote anything down on there. Without having seen the inside of this house, he had a number written down. That's the number he stuck with. When I said, you know, we have 5 full bedrooms plus an office.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, you know, nobody's ever asked me for 5 bedrooms. He wouldn't even consider the lower level, which is a full 3/4 walkout.
Huh.
Okay? I mean, I could put a patio doors in two of the three bedrooms.
Wow.
On the lower level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a patio doors outside the big family room there. And the bathroom has a jacuzzi tub in it.
Hmm.
No, it's not a jacuzzi tub. It's a soaking tub. It's an 85-gallon tub.
Right.
So it's not a small bathroom by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
In any case, he wouldn't even add a nickel for the lower level. Not a nickel.
I'll be darned.
And I'm sitting like going, this is crazy. So, you know, if we can get what we want for the house, we have the money to move.
Yep.
But the house, they both said, well, have you considered a short sale? And we're like, why would we short sale this?
Yeah, really? Jesus.
You know, all I can say is they're trying to drive the market.
Wow.
And they're trying to drive the market down. And I don't understand that. That doesn't make sense to me whatsoever.
Boy, me either. I mean, their income depends on the higher prices they can get.
Yeah, but you know what I think it is?
Hmm.
At least partially, the fact of the matter is, any volume is better than the current volume.
Well, that's true. Yep.
Although she said, you know, I suggested that a significant portion of the sales in the region were, you know, on foreclosure, and she goes, no, I don't think they're more than 10 or 15%. 46%.
46%?
46% of the sales in this region were of distressed properties.
Wow.
And the median price for homes went down $14,000.
Oh, my God.
It's about 7%.
Wow.
And I'm thinking this is what they're doing is, you know, can we drive volume?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and, of course, you know, somebody looking at this house, if they can get it for $260,000, $270,000, that's a great deal.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Wow.
2,600 square feet, six bedrooms, three baths. On a quarter acre in the city, you know, across the street from the park.
Yep. And what about your immediate neighborhood? I mean, you having any distressed sales there?
Actually, with the exception of the house that sold in December,
mm-hmm.
nothing has sold in this neighborhood for a year.
Oh, my goodness.
Nothing has sold for a year.
Everybody's sitting on it.
There's stuff for sale, but most of the stuff was on the market for 180 days and off.
Wow.
The only house that sold since March or April of last year that I'm aware of is the house immediately behind me, and they sold in February to the builder, and they bought a builder's home on the other side of town.
Ah.
And the builder sold that house for $4,000 less than he gave our former neighbors.
Wow. Huh.
So he took a $4,000 haircut to get them into a new house in the new development on the other side of town.
Mm-hmm. Which means that he made it up on that sale.
Yeah, but it screwed up the sales here.
Yes, it did.
But comp-wise, it's not comparable. They have a two-story, no walkout, unfinished lower level, three-bedroom, two-bath.
Hmm.
Same size lot.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually finished the lower level, but they have a half bath in the lower level and a family room. That's what they have on the lower level.
Hmm.
There's no expansion proper abilities.
Right.
You know, it's stuck. Three-bedroom, two-bath, that's it.
Yeah. Yep.
So,
God, that used to be the American dream. Apparently it isn't anymore.
Yeah, and, you know, and that house sold for $20,000 less than the realtors were talking about our house for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, you know, it sold for $40,000 less to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
You know, anyways, she really, 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 really wants to go. We had a big fight about it.
Whereabouts in California?
San Diego.
Ah, okay.
Go warm. Stay warm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Mike, all right, I'll let you go.
Okay, kiddo. Have a good one.
Talk to you later.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Phil.
You betcha. Thank you.
Bye. Bye.